Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing all right, but I'm tired, man. You worked us hard yesterday.
I know. It was a long couple of days. So why don't you tell everybody where we were?
We were at the, what do you call it, Cobb Galleria Center.
Yes.
And we were doing the SHRM Atlanta HR Conference, 2 full days. I don't know how many interviews. We must have done 35, 40-plus interviews.
Right.
And we were interviewing the vendors on the floor. We were interviewing speakers. We were interviewing SHRM personnel, attendees. And it was just one right after the other. But it was we learned a lot, man. It was a blast.
Yeah, those HR people, they're very nice people. They like to collaborate. They like to work together. It's a good group.
They're very learning-oriented, though.
Yeah. And we still fit in there.
And we still fit in. But, you know, they had those education sessions. And when the sessions were open, people would disperse and they would actually go to class. That
right.
doesn't happen at a lot of the shows that we work.
No.
So, no, we had a great time. That was a lot of fun. And first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning from the Georgia Department of Economic Development is the International Trade Manager for Global Commerce, Miss Mary Waters. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Thank you very much for having me.
So tell us a little bit about this outfit you're working with.
The Georgia Department of Economic Development, we are an agency of the state of Georgia. We're essentially the sales and marketing arm for the entire state. So branding Georgia as a great place to live, work, and play, great destination for film companies and video companies to come, great place to locate your business. And my specific role with Global Commerce is to work with existing Georgia industries to identify new international sales markets for their products and services.
Now, I've noticed that you mentioned film, that there's been a ton of film happening here, and some of the guests we've had have attributed it to the tax credit change in the law that makes it really, it's a good incentive to have things being filmed there. Has that trickled out to the international? Are we getting international film opportunities here?
You know, I am not sure on that. I'll need to check with you, with Lee Thomas from the film division.
Right.
My understanding is that it's still a domestic.
Right. The I guess the tax credits are more beneficial to the domestic companies.
Yes. But the tax credits really have been great. And they have made Georgia, I think it's the number 5 location for
filming now?
For filming in the U.S.
Wow. It's dramatic. It's noticeable to just every day. You see the stars, you know, in the news every day.
Yeah. It's really taken off, and it's always great to see.
Yeah, that's great.
Seeing that Georgia peach at the end of the credits, so it gives right. you a little rush.
So why is trade good for job creation in Georgia? Tell us a little bit, give us some perspective on that, because that seems a little counterintuitive to some of us.
Right. That's a very good question. And the simple answer is that trade creates jobs. The mission of the Georgia Department of Economic Development is to grow jobs in the state of Georgia. And through trade, exporting creates twice as many jobs as just domestic trade here within the United States. So for every job that's created producing a product or providing a service, with exporting, you have to create a second job somewhere else in the economy to actually get that product to market. So you're talking about 2-for-1 job creation, which is really one of the reasons that the state provides resources for companies to export. Another really good thing is that companies that export generally, on average, pay about 20% higher wages than companies that are only involved in domestic trade. So we're very proud of the pure economic development, pure job creation aspect of exporting, that we're not just moving jobs around from one part of the economy to the other. These are new jobs that didn't exist before to get Georgia product out into the international market.
Now, do you have any example of a company here in Georgia that's doing anything interesting in exporting it out?
Oh, absolutely. The trade team as a whole, we work with more than 800 companies every year and across industries and across regions of Georgia. So it's always interesting to see what Georgia companies are up to. And we're always taking companies on delegations. Right now, there is a trade show in Canada for environmental technologies. So there's a lot of cool clean tech happening in Georgia. And one of my colleagues is in Canada right now trying to get some of our Georgia companies hooked up. And so we really just love to work with our companies and
is this a situation where a company is maybe doing something here domestically and they don't even realize like that they could be exporting and they can kind of connect with you guys and you can help educate them on that?
Definitely. And, companies, the companies that we work with, we really have a specific focus on small businesses And what does that mean? So we work with about 800 companies a year. 86% of those companies have fewer than 100 employees, and more than half of them have fewer than 20 employees. So we really do work with small companies, and we really provide customized export assistance for companies. So if they just need the educational component, is international business something that I should invest some time and some money into doing? What are my options? What would my top markets be? We can help with that and through some of our partners. Mm-hmm. For companies that have maybe done a little bit of exporting, it's not uncommon for companies to make, you know, one or two sales to Canada or Mexico or maybe Chile with the free trade agreement. And they really have sort of gotten that hook and they want to do more.
So those are the starter countries?
They can be. Those tend to be the easier markets of entry. Mm-hmm. With the NAFTA free trade agreement. Canada is still Georgia's top export market. So that's where a lot of companies choose to go first.
Right.
Because
the practice.
Exactly.
So is Georgia particularly well suited for international trade? And if so, why?
Georgia is very well suited for international trade. We have our location advantage is huge, not just in terms of domestic trade, but exporting. We have the infrastructure in place with Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport and the ports of Savannah and Brunswick. We really have the capacity to get both people and goods to international markets very quickly and efficiently. And so that's a huge strength. And I would also say that Georgia as a whole is a very international city. You know, we have more than 3,600 companies representing more than 60 countries. We've got 70 consulates, honorary consulates, and binational trade commissions in the state. So there's lots of international ties. And I think that helps reflect why Georgia is really doing very well on the export side. We're a national player. For the 2011 calendar year, the statistics just came out, and it was a record year for Georgia. We sold $34.7 billion worth of goods.
Wow.
And that's the largest export amount ever on record for the state of Georgia. It's up just about 20% from 2010, and 2010 was up about 20% from the year before that. So we're really rocking and rolling and really like to use the assets that we've got here in the state to get it done.
Now, Is Georgia, I would imagine the bulk of it happens in Atlanta, but Savannah's kind of a interesting place because of the new port that they're trying to get going there.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that? The benefits of that port?
Absolutely. So the Panama Canal is going to be deepened here between now and 2014, and the Port of Savannah really wants to be poised to take advantage of that when the post-Panamax ships, which are really, I don't know if you've been to the Port of Savannah and seen the ships coming through now, but really they're just going to be dwarfed in comparison to what's going to be coming through when the Panama Canal is widened and deepened. And so that is definitely something that the state is putting resources into to get that done. But I will just say that exporting, we work with companies all over the state. You know, we're in Albany, we're in Dahlonega, we're in Toccoa. So companies don't just need to be near Hartsfield-Jackson or near the Port of Savannah
There's
to take advantage of this.
Statewide.
Absolutely. And the state of Georgia, we have a trade team of 6 international trade managers. And each of those trade managers works a specific industry focus. That's their primary consideration is the industry focus. But then we also cover different regions of the state. So one way or another, we're working with every company in Georgia that wants to find some international opportunities.
And does this lend itself to particular kinds of business, like particular types of manufacturing, or does it? Is it wider than that?
It really can go wide. The things that we look for in a company that we work for is if a company is doing very well domestically, that's a good indicator that they could be successful internationally. But really what we're looking for is companies that are either manufacturing a product here or they're providing services here, but the international decision makers are here in Georgia. So we work with small businesses that are making things here. We also work with companies where the global headquarters might be in some other state or might be international, but the manufacturing is here in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And all of the exporting decisions are made here in Georgia. So we just really want to make sure that the people that we're working with in the state have the drive, have the commitment, have the motivation to go international. that they're willing to invest a little bit of time and money into the international process. And they're willing to be flexible, but that they are doing a little bit and want to do more. But we work with companies literally all across the spectrum.
So speaking of investment, is there a fee structure associated with getting help from you guys, or is this something that's funded by the government? How does the money on that piece work?
Right. Well, we are a state agency, so most of our programs and services are free. In terms of access to our international offices, the state of Georgia has 10 international offices all around the world, and they are really our go-to guys in terms of helping Georgia companies. But when you work with us, all of those services are free. Market research, due diligence on companies that might be contacting you through email or on the phone, finding qualified distribution and import partners in different markets.
That's great, because I mean, you and I, we wouldn't have the first clue on how to go about
it. I'm sure most people don't, right?
Right.
Right. The first step is really to call us, and the Department of Economic Development, the International Trade Group, is part of a wider team of customized export assistance. The U.S. Export Assistance Center is a consortium of federal, state, and local groups that help companies go global. So we work with the U.S. Commercial Service. We work with the Small Business Administration, the Export-Import Bank of the United States, the Small Business Development Centers. So depending on the need of the Georgia company, one call either to me or to any of my colleagues or to anyone within that USIAC network gets you connected to all the parts and pieces. So if you need education, if you need financing, if you need market access, one call to us gets you connected to all those different avenues for international trade.
Can you walk us through like a hypothetical situation? Say I'm a manufacturer here and I'm doing well and I'm making whatever chairs. You know, rocking chairs, right? And I want to sell them to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing it here and everything's fine, but I don't know like the people that buy chairs in Canada.
Right.
So now I contact you and then you help me connect with people in Canada that are people that could potentially buy my chairs, or do you help me get the money transferred from Canada to here? Like there's tons of little things that are big things, you know, when you're doing something like this.
Absolutely. And I will get to that question, but the the sort of quick and dirty answer is that we really take our cues from companies in terms of what we can do.
Right.
We do have a lot of leeway of how we can help. But in the case of the rocking chair company, they would call us. I would ask if they're getting any international inquiries.
Right.
Have they been getting hits on their
website?
On
their website. So like, oh, yeah, we've got six people in Canada who love these chairs or something. You know, there's a hint that maybe there is something there.
Right. And companies a lot of times aren't sure what to do with that. They're not sure if they're legitimate. They're not sure what they should be doing with these. And so they do call us. But that would be my first question. Are you getting international hits? Have you ever done anything internationally? Have you encountered international buyers at trade shows or other conferences or things that you attend? And depending on the answers to those questions, usually what we do for a company that is brand new to export is we bring in our partners with the Small Business Development Center, just because that's the educational component, the real how-tos of exporting and knowing if you're ready, learning how to pick your markets, how to price your product, how to get your product to the market.
Right.
Sort of all those educational details. But in conjunction with that, what we can do at the state is run some straight trade statistics. We will ask you for your harmonized code or your Schedule B number. And that's a unique number to every product in the world. These numbers are harmonized globally so that you know when you're sending something to China or to Brazil or to Peru, customs all across the world knows that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 is this product.
Right.
And that's what all the taxes and tariffs are based on, as well as that harmonized code. So once we determine the proper Schedule B number for your rocking chairs, then we can pull all kinds of information, not just about Canada, but we can see what countries Georgia specifically is selling rocking chairs to. We can look at larger U.S. trends to see what are the top markets for U.S. chair makers selling abroad. We can also go into the import statistics and look and see where Canada is currently buying their rocking chairs from. Are they buying a lot of U.S. product? That might mean that it's a good market to get into. Are they going with some other manufacturers and the U.S. share is relatively small? That tells you some information. Has there been a growth trend? These are the kinds of things that tell us if Canada would be a good market for this company to get involved with. And so through that process, we would also get the Georgia company connected with the managing director of our Canadian trade office in Toronto, just to ask some questions and get some market research and really understand what the market is for their chairs in Canada and really see if it's a viable market going forward.
And that's all no charge.
All no charge.
That's incredible to me.
That's amazing.
Now, we spent the last 2 days at a trade show. It was very focused on a specific industry, HR, and it was an HR conference for the SHRM. Are there trade shows in other countries and in this country where you're showing off your product or service with the idea of letting people in other countries know, hey, we think this thing might play in Switzerland or Germany or that kind of thing?
Definitely. And there are a lot of trade shows in the United States that attract a lot of international buyers. The U.S. Department of Commerce actually has a whole program of trade shows that are called International Buyer Programs, IBPs. And if you go onto the Commerce website, which is www.export.gov, there's a whole list of trade shows both in the United States and abroad where the U.S. government actually brings in international delegations to those trade shows, so that if you're a U.S. company, specifically a Georgia company, at that show, you could be seeing international buyers from several different companies
they're there to
seeking you out.
Shop U.S. companies and products to bring back to their country.
Absolutely. And so on the domestic side, there are several shows. Internationally, it's a little bit tougher because, quite frankly, the United States is still working to get large delegations of Georgia companies into international markets. My personal experience, I work with a lot of companies in the healthcare and life sciences sector, and we take a delegation of Georgia companies to the Medica trade show in Dusseldorf, Germany, every November. And we are in the International Pavilion Hall, and the U.S. Pavilion, it might have maybe 100, 150 companies, but we're dwarfed by the French pavilion and the Chinese pavilion and the Brazil pavilion.
Right.
And so we're really trying to work through our state-based trade programs to really get the word out that U.S. companies can be competitive in international markets. We've got the innovative technologies. We've got the quality products that international buyers are looking for.
So you're there representing Georgia. Is every state represented there, or is it unique that Georgia's there?
Georgia does have a very unique trade program in the fact that we've been nationally recognized for the
right.
quality of our export services. That's something that we're very proud of.
So like Iowa's there? Rhode Island?
Florida. At the Medica show, Florida is usually there. Ohio is usually
right.
there.
Massachusetts. Are you all together in the U.S.?
No, we're segregated a little bit.
They all lay awake at night wishing they had Mary Waters working
right.
for them. They wish they were with Georgia. Obviously, or apparently to me, it looks like products really lend themselves to this, but is there ever an opening for services? Can services be marketed in this fashion as well, in your experience?
Absolutely, and it takes a little bit more of a learning curve just because you don't have a widget that you're trying to sell somebody.
Right.
But we have a lot of companies that are doing educational services or training. A lot of companies in the aviation space, they might not be manufacturing parts for planes, but they can help train pilots on new systems and things like that. So those are the kinds of services companies, law firms, translation firms, consulting firms. We do work with a lot of companies in the service sector, and it takes a little bit longer lead development time because there isn't a tangible good, but we do work with services companies as well.
I find that very encouraging.
Yeah, that's great.
We've made no secret that we were talking about before we go on the air. I mean, we have designs on replicating what we do all over the country and internationally as well. So I'm personally very intrigued by the idea that you can get this much support.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that's
to
great.
Me. So how can our listeners learn more? What's the best way for them to reach out and get in touch with you and have a substantive conversation on these topics?
Right. We love working with companies, so please get in touch with us. Probably the best way is to go onto our website, which is www.georgia.org. We also have a trade-specific portal, which is http://trade.georgia.org, and that has all of our contact information, our calendar of upcoming events. That's really the best way to get in the door and have a conversation and take it from there.
All right. Well, if you're just joining us, we've been visiting with Mary Waters, International Trade Manager for Global Commerce for the Georgia Department of Economic Development. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. This has been great.
Yeah. How about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Sounds good.
Terrific. Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning is Ms. Christine Stadler, Attorney at Law. Welcome to the show, Christine.
Thank you.
Our neighbor, Christine, we should say, right down the hall. Known you for quite some time, and I know Lee has more direct experience dealing with the law than I do, but get us caught up. What's happening in the field of law, and give our listeners a little bit of a feel for the kind of work you do.
Well, Stadler Law Group basically provides, we're a general firm, and we do handle many different types of cases. One of our specialties are family law and business law, bankruptcy, and things like that. And I think in this economy, we have seen the two intertwine so much that we are able to provide our clients with so many different services of dealing with the foreclosures or loan modifications, and then economic downturns of dealing with credit card companies, mortgage companies, and so much of that is so intertwined when you're going through a divorce or a family law issue, they all intertwine, and there's not really a firm out there that specializes and is able to consult and say, okay, well, here, we can deal with this on your mortgage, but we understand that you're going through a divorce, and this is how this happens, and how they all work together. And that's one of the things that we do, is we provide that expertise to our clients and give them the knowledge that they need to be able to, one, financially survive in this marketplace.
And so what are some of the major mistakes that you find people going through this process will have a tendency to make if they don't take advantage of the benefit of your counsel? What are some major traps they could fall into?
One of the major traps that people fall into is, oh, I can do this by myself.
Do what by themselves?
Represent themselves in a divorce.
Oh, really? People think that?
Or wow. A bankruptcy, or let's say they're getting sued for a debt that they may owe, or, they think, okay, I can do my loan modification. And we make it so much easier for them, but when they do it themselves, they make so many mistakes that then we have to come in and try to clean
that.
It up.
Right.
And unfortunately, sometimes the mistakes they make cannot be fixed, period.
Really? They don't mention that on the legal Zoom commercials.
No, they don't.
This reminds me of that poster at the mechanic shop. He charges you X. He charges you X plus to watch and like 2X to help, right? You just bring the problem to you and let you work on it, right?
It is. We can save the client so much more money if you get us in the beginning and we help you from the beginning.
Right.
One of the things about our firm is we do a flat fee. And we changed the way that we charged when the market started turning down.
Right.
Because there's so many clients that go to attorneys, oh, I don't want to pay the hourly fee. At least with our clients, they know, okay, this is going to be a flat fee, and we can do a flat fee up front. We can do flat monthly fees, depending on what type of case it is.
Right.
And that way, the clients come in and say, okay, I know I can pay that. I know I can pay that on a regular basis, and I'm okay with that. And they don't have to worry about, okay, well, I talked with Christine for 2 hours. That's going to be $600, $300 an hour.
Right.
And they don't have to worry about that. And I think it helps them to feel a little bit more at ease that we're handling the situation and we're not bilking them.
Right. Well, because otherwise you think it's kind of this bottomless pit that it never ends, right? Because I'm going to ask you a question, you're going to give me an answer, and then we're going to keep talking, and then it just never ends. But this flat fee seems more palatable.
It's like the therapist says, we're making really good progress.
Come back next week.
Not that I would know anything about therapists, just from what I pick up on TV. But
I think it really helps our clients, and it helps us too, because we're not focused on, okay, we got to get this number of billable time, or, we need to make sure that we move on to the next client because this client is not paying or whatever.
Right.
We find that it's easier for us to collect it's easier for clients to pay. And
they're
more
probably happier.
They're much happier. So I have a very good referral base. So that's a good thing.
Now, have you noticed in this economy, people staying together longer, or they know they're getting a divorce, but they're kind of putting it on hold and maybe living in separate rooms in their house because they can't afford to sell their house? And are you dealing with any of that?
Yeah, we do find that a lot. One, that they can't even afford to live separate.
Right.
Let alone try to get the divorce and move forward. That, you know, because when you go through a divorce, obviously now you're setting up two different households and you have to support two separate households.
Right.
And it, you know, and the other problem that we're finding and that's leading to people to stay together and, you know, or live in separate rooms is the fact that nowhere in our time did we ever think that our debt on the house would be greater than what it's worth.
Right.
And, you know, it's funny because a lot of divorce attorneys always joke about the fact that, you know, everybody used to fight over who's getting the house.
Now no one wants the house.
Now everybody finds out who gets it. Right. Take it, please.
You take it.
That's funny.
And it's created so many different issues.
Right.
And that's where our firm provides you the expertise, because I actually worked for a bank for about 6 years as a branch manager, where I actually underwrote loans and, you know, supervised that. So I understand from a lender standpoint what they're looking for.
Right.
And clients will come to me and I say, okay, you need to go to the lender. You need to ask this, this, and this. If you don't get the answer, you ask for their supervisor. And you keep going till you get the right answer, because I know it's out there.
Right.
And a lot of attorneys don't know the backgrounds of lenders and how they work and what they think. And so we provide that to our clients, and we could say, okay, we can get you out of this situation so that you can move forward with your life and your divorce. And that's where we think we help.
Now, do you find that money is at the root of a lot of marital problems? I mean, maybe this is a little bit out of your purview. I'm just curious.
Is
money at the root? Is it a big part of the problem? Is it why they're getting a divorce in the first place?
I don't think the money being the root of the problem. I think in most divorce situations, communication is the root of the problem.
Uh-huh.
People stop communicating. People stop talking, and whether it's talking about, you know, you get when you talk about money, a lot of times people, the wife doesn't tell the husband what she's spending.
Right.
And therefore she's racking up more debt, and she's not communicating that to the husband. And or the husband saying, well, I'm not bringing in as much money as I used to, but is afraid to communicate that to the wife.
Right, like he's failing, and then,
yeah,
you know, she's spending. And
so it's all communication in any relationship, either a business relationship, a marital relationship. I mean, I look at a divorce as just a division of a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it from a business standpoint.
Right.
Because I tell my clients, I can't get emotionally involved in your case, because my goal is to make sure that you come out financially sound.
Right.
So I look at it from a business standpoint. How do I divide this partnership? And, you know, and that goes on. I said, usually when you have children, you still have to communicate. So communication is the key. And then whether they're communicating about money, children, anything.
Now, is there ever times where they think they're going to get a divorce, they start working with you, and then you force these issues to the forefront, and then they start talking about it, and then they don't get divorced?
I had a case just the other day where we actually went through mediation, where we actually settled all the issues, and it was a matter of just drawing up the documents, and 2 days later, we get a call, they're reconciling, and they're going to work it out.
Because you forced the communication. Now,
yes.
Everything was on the table, so there was no more, like, kind of resentment and hidden issues, and everything was there for everyone to see, and they figured, hey, I can work through this.
Yeah, we have it happen quite a bit, because, you know, a lot of times when people come to me, I tell them the truth.
Right.
You know, if somebody's doing something, like, say, they're acting a certain way, I'll say, you know what? Let's not do that. Let's do it this way. Okay? You know, I said, you know, don't say that. Say this. You know, I said, because you can get a lot more with honey than you can with vinegar.
Right.
Okay? So if you really want her to, you know, react, then go ahead and push that button.
Right. If that's your objective, then
that's what you want.
Poke at that.
Yeah. But, you know, I try to tell people, I represent a lot of men.
Uh-huh.
Majority of our practice in the domestic area is representing men, and we do a lot for custody and child support. And, you know, it's, I always say I like to represent men because they actually listen to me. and they actually follow my advice. But I tell them, I say, you know, listen, if you really want, this is her goal. I can tell you exactly what she wants.
Right.
So if you communicate with her towards her goal, you will get so much further towards your own goal.
Right.
So it's all about communication. So, yeah, it's an interesting practice. I get paid for other people's dirt.
Now, do you ever, or is it just absolutely taboo and you should never do this, ever work with both parties? Or should each party get their own attorney?
No, I mean, legally I can only represent one party. Uh-huh. Now, I have had clients come and say, okay, we've reached an agreement and this is what we need for you to draw up. And we can do that.
Gotcha.
And there's other cases where one of the big trend in Georgia is the use of mediators,
right,
where a third party comes in and works with both parties to try to reach an agreement. Now, the mediator doesn't give legal advice, but they say, okay, here's the issue. This is how you want it resolved. This is how you want it resolved. And they try to get you to come to a meeting of the minds. Now, I have a lot of times where clients come in and they say, this is what I want. And I say, okay, let's try to work it through, because I want people to resolve their differences quickly.
Right.
Because the trend has found that the longer your divorce action lasts, the longer you'll fight after.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can resolve your issues quickly.
What is quickly? How long is quickly?
Well, in Georgia, you have to wait a 31-day period.
Okay.
Okay. But, I mean, if you can get it resolved within the first, 3 to 6 months,
that's
pretty quick.
Right.
But if it goes on for 3 years, you'll be fighting for another 3 years after that.
Right.
And then you get to also have this bankruptcy conversation, which I want to talk more to you about.
Exactly. I mean, unfortunately, we are finding bankruptcy as a very strong part of divorce actions. And it's a slippery slope when you get involved with bankruptcy as it relates to divorce. People say, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take all this debt in my divorce, but that's okay because I'll bankrupt later. Well, you got to be careful because you may not be able to bankrupt on it.
And why is that?
Because the bankruptcy courts have basically changed the law to protect what is called domestic support orders. So if you owe child support or an alimony and you're $10,000 behind, you cannot bankrupt on it.
Because so they think in the back of their head that's what they're going to do? They'll just pile it in with this other debt and it'll all go away?
And it doesn't.
But does the other debt go away, everything except for what you owe in child support, or maybe not?
Maybe not, because it depends on how your divorce agreement is set up. Let's say you walk out of the divorce and you're going to pay X in alimony and X in child support, but you're also going to take all the marital debt.
Right.
Well, the way that that's drawn up, you may never be able to bankrupt on that marital debt.
Oh, because they looked at it like you're strategically doing this in order to bankrupt later?
Well, no, they look at it as because you took that debt to help right. support your spouse and let her start her own life.
Right.
So they could look at that as a domestic support order, and that in order for her and the creditors not to come after her, you have to pay these bills.
Right.
And if you fail to pay those bills, then
that's on you.
It's right. on you, but the creditors still can come after her.
Oh, they still can.
Even though you agree to divorce. So, yeah, it's very, that's where we say, you really need to speak to an attorney. If you're considering a bankruptcy and a divorce, you really need to talk to an attorney that knows both areas.
Right.
Because, I mean, it was funny. I was in court a couple weeks ago, and we had a case where there was bankruptcy issues and domestic issues, and the other attorney stood up and he was going to argue some of the bankruptcy law, and I just looked at him and I cited off this rule to the judge, and the judge looked at me and goes, she's right. And all the other attorneys in the room go, can I get your card? Because there's so many attorneys out there that do domestic,
right,
that
they
don't
do
know
one
bankruptcy.
Or the other, and then both. So
yeah,
that's
so it really helps.
So divorce aside, though, bankruptcy is not just a silver bullet either, right? I mean, it comes with a price tag attached to it, does it, when you go down that path?
It does. I mean, a bankruptcy will stay on your record for 7 years, okay? One of the things that a bankruptcy does, though, it does help give people a fresh start. I mean, it really does. If you are in the position where you are struggling to meet your bills, let's say you're in a house that is upside down 100 to 200,000. That's not uncommon in this market. If you're that far upside down, you can honestly suspect that in your lifetime, you will never be above water in that house. So, if you're facing 100,000, you're willing to walk away from the house and you have all this other credit card debt, a fresh start may be what you need. And it's funny because people say, well, it's going to hurt my credit. It's going to hurt my credit for 7 years. Actually, I will tell you, because I worked as a lender, people that file bankruptcy, you can actually see your credit go up within a year to 2 years after you file bankruptcy.
Really? Right.
Yes, because you become a better risk to
because you don't have that
creditor.
Debt.
Not just that, you can't file bankruptcy for another 7 years.
Oh, so
they know you're a good risk, you don't have the debt, and you can't bankrupt on them.
How about that?
So, you know, I mean, I have seen people within a year and a half to 2 years after doing bankruptcy have 750, 780 scores.
Really?
Wow. Yes. And it actually hurts your credit more to have debts that you're not paying or that you're over the limit on.
Right. So sometimes it is better to kind of bite the bankruptcy bullet and move on.
It really is. And people, you know, when people come, they're really emotional and they're stressed about it. And it's not that difficult of a process.
Right.
You have to be careful. Again, you have to consult with an attorney. And we do have some clients that, you know, file bankruptcy without consulting an attorney. Like you said, they go and get this form and fill it out. Well, there's a lot of things that people do. And if you don't know, when you file bankruptcy, can come back to get you. Like, for instance, you decide you're going to loan your, you know, a relative $10,000.
Right.
And then 90 days later, file bankruptcy. The court can come and say to your relative, I need that $10,000 back.
Aha.
So, you know, it's a slippery slope. People need to make sure that, you know, when you're walking in an area where, you know, the law's in question, talk to an attorney.
Exactly. That's what you do every day.
It is. I mean, we provide free consultations for people. There's a lot of times where somebody will come in and talk to me, and I'll say, you know what, bankruptcy's not an option for you.
Oh, so you can kind of tell at a glance sometimes?
Yeah. It's very simple for us because we do it every day. But somebody will come in. I mean, I had somebody the other day, and they're like, well, you know, should I do bankruptcy? I said, no, bankruptcy's not an option, but you can take this route with the lender. And you can do this, this, and this. You don't even need me to help you do it. And I'll tell you what you need to do. And once you do that, you should be good.
Wow.
Now, that may not be a client for me right there.
Right.
But it'll give me referrals later.
Right, I'm sure. Now, you do bankruptcy, you do divorce. Do you do, like, just kind of the basic wills, trust, things like that? Or
we do. We have a attorney on staff that does wills, trusts, and estates. We, you know, we have a general practice. We also do criminal law. We have an attorney on our practice that was a solicitor at the city of Atlanta for his prosecutor. So we do DUIs. Unfortunately, when you do domestic law, you have so many clients that have so many other issues. Oh, my child just got arrested for possession at the high school. Or
happens to Lee all the time.
Or, you know, their child got, you know, pulled over for a DUI and they're under 21.
Right.
You know, and they don't know who to call.
Right.
Or, like, I have a client that I represented him probably about 5-10 years ago and called and said my daughter was in a horrible car accident. It's not her fault. We have an attorney on staff that does personal injury. So, you know, unfortunately, when you represent people in the family law situation, they get to know you really well, you get to know them really well, and you try to help them. We help companies out in terms of businesses and things like that also.
Uh-huh.
Helping set up businesses, you know, from every aspect.
Cool.
Contracts, you know, negotiations, things like that.
But your specialty is family law and bankruptcy.
My specialty, I started the practice, and I started with the specialty of family law and bankruptcy. And then we have added attorneys that come in and do the other aspects of it.
Cool. Well, if somebody needed your services or wanted to have a conversation with you, do you have a website?
We do. It is StadlerLawGroup.com. And we are here locally in Sandy Springs and very convenient to all areas. We primarily practice in all the major counties.
Throughout Atlanta.
Throughout Atlanta.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. This is Lee Cantor signing off for Stone Payton and our guest here today. We will see you all next week.